nothing gets attention more in the room than stillness.
I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the No Bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. Enjoy this episode.
Alicia Oxy is a Los Angeles-based actress and best-selling author. A few of her credits include recurring roles on The Purge, Ballers, Life Sentence, Satisfaction, Days of Our Lives, General Hospital, Heart of Dixie, True Detective, and many more. She is the host of the really good podcast, I'm jealous, That One Audition, which features conversations with your favorite on-screen storytellers and Hollywood influencers who reveal their most life-changing audition tales and the survival skills they've collected along the way. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I want to...
Exciting to be a guest. I'm like, yeah. Steer the ship, man. Go for it.
All right. I'll try to make you pressure. Proud. No pressure. Yeah, your podcast is so good.
Thank you so much. I really enjoy... It's so exciting that we get to have these conversations now. It's just fun to pull back the curtain. So I'm blown away and do it every week. So I'm just, thanks for listening.
So what is the story of the nexus of the podcast? Why did you start it? What was the idea?
Do you really not know this story?
I know it.
Okay. I would like to know the degree of shock that I'm getting ready to give somebody for the first time. I had flagellation. I farted in an audition, not once, but twice, while running next to a model that looked like Giselle. And thought it was really fucking funny and was really proud of my improv skills. But when I got to class that night, like I was in Leslie Kahn at the moment, so hence my improv skills. And I shared the story and everybody else started sharing these ridiculous, fucking embarrassing stories. And I thought, how interesting that this industry is like splashed across magazines, made to look perfect, the 1%. And here's like all the times, the thousands of times that we've failed or messed up or done something really cool. And I just was really curious to like take a peek at that and let other people take a peek at that. Cause I think it's translatable to anything that is striving or creating a path, is that you have to fail a lot before you get there. And let's open the conversation about the failing part or the journey part instead of highlighting just the reward part. It's opened up some really cool conversations. And for me, it just also keeps me from quitting.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm talking to people that have been in the business for 20, 30 years and how many times they contemplate quitting or how they shapeshift their artistry or how they've succeeded, what they've done. Like, that's the other thing, too. We get to, like, pluck out little life lessons from other people without saying, tell me what you did. They get to tell us stories. And I'm talking to some of the best storytellers in the world. So that's a privilege. It's fun. Don't you think? Aren't you enjoying it? Getting the bullshit like back end of how people do it? Cause nobody does it the same at all.
Yeah, no, it's been, I always say that this podcast was the best idea I've ever had. It gives me the excuses to talk to people who are ahead in their careers and ask them anything that I want to ask them.
It's a mentorship, right? Like it's like kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. And what's really interesting about it is you can ask somebody, like you could ask an acting teacher, you could take someone out to coffee when you're starting out and you could ask them their advice and you would get probably some pretty good advice, but people wouldn't always agree with that advice. But when you're talking to dozens or hundreds of people, you start to see trends. And you hear the same answers and you hear the same advice. And after you've heard it like 15 times, you can go, that's probably true. Like,
and there's like also osmosis. I think I am a person who needs to do to learn. I'm a doer. And then I learn from doing it. But this is my auditory learning is catching up. I've done 450 interviews. So sometimes I walk into auditions now and I'm like, oh, Elliot said, nobody fucking likes perfect. Why are you trying to be perfect right now? like you don't know your lines, like just like being the character. Remember what Paul said, like da 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 da. So it's like you have little coaches now on your exactly. fucking shoulders as you roll up in to do your craft. And I didn't go to school for this. I don't know if you did, but I was too shameful to really stand in like what I wanted to do and embrace it. So I got to create my own school. This is the rodeo I picked, and I'm honored that I get to talk to people and do yeah. it.
Well, you're really good. I rewatched the episodes that you were in the first season of True Detective. And I remember seeing those. What year did that come out?
2014.
Okay. I remember specifically like watching those scenes and being like, damn, she's good. So, yeah. So 450 interviews. What are some of the things that you have learned? Like, what are some of those trends that you hear?
I mean, the thing that you always hear, and it's just took me so long at the beginning to realize that you are not going in for that job. Like you're going in for the relationship. And I think I started out and I was like, I'm going to get this job. Like the nuance of like, I'm here now and I'm going to go on my merit and my talents and it's just going to happen. And I don't think that that's the case. I think you need fans and you need to like really show up. And do the, like, remember why you're doing it and not have it be results oriented. I hear a lot of that. I think that's what holds people back the most is the why people fail the most or not fail, but why people quit the most is because they have an expectation of immediate grandiose career, like immediately being the lead of something or immediately working. So then when they're not getting it, then you're like, I guess I'm not an actor. Like what? So understanding the ladder that had the steps that you must go through to earn your stripes, to be deserving of the responsibility of holding down the whole entire movie. I think after talking to people, I know these are like ethereal things, but it's like really, I think wisdom about a craftsmanship versus an impulsive validating approval role. Like, I think a lot of actors want that stamp of approval at the beginning. And a lot of people talk about that where some people did get lucky and they showed up and they booked right away. And they're really sad that they did. Like all those 450 interviews that I've done, it's the longevity of the game and learning your craft and not expecting perfection. And like, I always go back to like the idea too, like Tom Hanks, we don't get to see his like first couple movies. Now you do. If I was to do it all over again, would invest in really learning my craft. And then also saying, fuck it a lot. Like it is not personal. Like so many stories that people tell me they're not personal. And then you never know, like 2-3 years down the road, that one person that was sitting in that room that you thought bombed, loved you and now brought you in. Like the connecting the dots, like I think you just got to stay in it. If you're good and if you love it, just stay in.
Okay. The glory of having this podcast is that I get to ask like really selfish questions whenever I want to.
Yes.
Right.
It's the best, right?
Yeah. And so, one thing that I'm dealing with right now, and I've been asking people this question when I have them on this podcast. And, so I like to get different people's perspectives. So I live in Chicago. I don't have very many auditions. There's just not that many TV shows filming here. There's like, I don't know. At any one time, there's probably like six.
Yeah, all the Chicago's
for sure.
PD, you gotta hit up all those.
I know, but I've been on them, so I can't be on them.
Oh, oh.
Once you're on one, you can't.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So I don't have that many auditions, and because of that, I think that I have gotten really used to having time to prepare, like you know, at least like 24 hours, maybe 48 hours, sometimes less. Sometimes it's the same day, but I feel like I really need that. Like if someone was like, here's this audition, can you make it? It's in an hour. And it's like six pages of dialogue. I would have a heart attack. And I'm trying to fix that because I don't think that that's the right way to be. What are your thoughts on that? And do you have any advice for me?
As far as, yeah, have a kid. No, I'm just kidding. as soon as you have a kid, man, you just don't have all the time in the world to prepare. So you have to laser focus into what serves you the best. So it's two frames of thought though, too. It's also kind of glorious when you can marinate in it and you can take your time. And I think for some of the Oscar winning performances that we've seen, the reason why they're so delicious and amazing and wonderful is because they've had all the time in the world to really get into it. But for the audition part, I think, are you asking like legit tips on how to do it faster?
Whatever you think will help. Like the last guy I talked to said that he won't even look at the script until he gets into the casting office.
That's
he doesn't even open
bananas.
It. That's what I said.
You know what that is? That is amazing. A way to work on instinct. And maybe he's been riding this bike for 60 years. And if you can jump on a bike really quickly and you can evaluate it. And sometimes people's first instincts are amazing. But if for any reason he needs to be redirected or there's any complexities in the script, like, you're kind of fucked. So, and also running off authenticity and instinct, I think is great if you want to be the guy that books kind of whenever. I think also it's a respect to the writers and directors. Like, you have no idea how long it's taken them to like bring this project to life. So I think it's our responsibility as an actor to walk in there with some clear fucking choices and also say, hey, the money that you would invest in me, this is what I'm going to do with it. So I also think I like to respect the craft to a certain degree, but also make really smart choices in a short amount of time now, because for auditions, like, we just don't have that luxury. And the cool thing about you being in Chicago and the way the world is now is you might get a self-tape that day or the day before or on the day to be in Atlanta and, you know what, like get your skill set like sharpened and ready to go. I go straight to core knowledge and I pull out identifiers in the script, how other people are talking about my character. I study the patterns of behavior really quickly. Like, okay, when someone says hello, she acquiesces and goes in for a hug or she pulls back, like start noticing patterns of behavior, make really strong choices on that pattern of behavior. Oh God, she has a fear of intimacy. She can never like be into this. And then start making some just really strong choices. And then go in as prepared as I can be so that I can allow discovery and exploration in the moment, because that's where I'm booking. Even if it's off self-tape, if I'm going in to tape something, I prepare. And I always shoot my rehearsal because that's my magic. Because I discover something because all of a sudden the reader says something to me, or 90% of the time I send my rehearsal. So that's the other thing too, is don't go for perfect. People like messy. Everybody that I talk to, I'm sure some of the people that you've talked to, a lot of the roles I've even gotten, I was really messy in the audition room, meaning I didn't know exactly what I was doing at every beat. I was listening. I wasn't, made those choices. And then I like threw the pages and kind of really went and played and then walked out and was like, well, that wasn't how I expected it to go. And that was fun. That was cool. Or I fumble. Whenever I fumble, I almost always book the ones that I fumble.
Really?
Yeah, I think that a lot of casting directors I talk to too, they love when actors crack. They get to see. How do you recover in the crack? You stay in character and recover. It's a really beautiful moment. Like, that's the magic. That's when somebody like all of a sudden pays attention, I think. They're like, right. Oh God, they didn't forget their, like, you know, when people forget their line. If you've ever been in acting class and you watch actors forget their lines, you're like, oh, this is going to be amazing, whatever they do next. And they're like, and then they take themselves out. They're like, fuck, sorry, I forgot my line. You're like, no, oh my God, you were right there. And it was magical. And you got all this paying attention. So I just try to remember that for auditions is this doesn't have to be perfect. This has to be like water. And I'm going to put my water tank in these conditions. What's her socioeconomic, like where does she live? What does it look like? How does she feel about the people she's talking to and the people she's talking about? No, let's go fly.
So are you, if you only have like an hour or something or whatever, a couple hours, are you putting most of your effort into what you just talked about? How much are you putting into memorizing? Or are you just saying like, I'm not going to be able to memorize this. I'm just going to use the script. Like I will.
I don't memorize because the way I study when I have like a few hours, the way I study, when I study patterns of behavior and I'm doing like line analysis, the line is already in me. If it's good writing or even decent writing, if I understand the pattern of how she is behaving, the lines should almost come out of your mouth. So once I do that prep work, and then I do a lot of, depending on how much time I have,
I do a lot of imagination and dream work. So I will use all my senses to lift the lines off the page. So as I'm seeing, like, she walked down the street, like, what did that street look like? Like, see the street, like, really, like, was it cobblestone? Was it sunny outside? Was it a little windy? Was it cold that day? Like, and assign a feeling to it. And so then the lines are really there. I also then do, if I have a little bit, if I have a lot more time or once I'm working on something, then I build out a whole entire life of memories for the character. So then I step outside of me. And I do that in meditation and I just use all my senses the same way. And then I do dream work every night, usually before my auditions. If I'm struggling for an inner struggle for them or a secret, or what are they hiding or what are they really battling through, I ask my dreams. As okay as it sounds. And I put a little pad next to my bed. Lucy, True Detective. I did a lot of dream work with Lucy. A lot. I even now I can like flash to her memories. Like I can see her mom's like black toes when she was dead, where the mustache of the guy that like sexually assaulted her, the belt buckle that she chipped her tooth on. Like I see all that, like just like that. Hmm. And that was, I did that 5.5 years ago. I sound like a crazy person, don't I?
I mean, yeah, exactly. That role was so good. It was so authentic. It looked so real.
She is so real to me. She is. She's part of, yeah, she was, I was so protected. I was so, from the moment I auditioned for that, I was like, as soon as I figured out who she was, I was like, oh, nobody understands her. No. Nobody's going to get her the way I get, like, no. Cause they're going to play at her and play her down. A prostitute has a need to be saved too, has a need to hope. She just didn't get out of that 5 mile radius that she grew up in. I mean, look at all the stuffed animals that are on that bed. She's a little girl. She's waiting for somebody to save the day. She was yummy. She was so yummy. It was the best work I've gotten to do thus far. And then HBO was very wonderful.
So I want to ask about that. And one thing that I never do on my podcast is say, how was it to act with this person? Because part of the reason that I started the podcast was I hated those questions. But I specifically am very interested in Matthew McConaughey. And I've actually studied some of the movies he's been in. I've done monologues that he's done. And it's led me to understand things about acting from reading scripts that he's been in and then watching what he's done with them. And so my question is, in True Detective, you are in scenes with Matthew McConaughey, and essentially it's pretty much just you and him. How did he surprise you? What is he doing?
You know what? I got so lucky to be locked in a room with an actor who was changing his reputation in the game. So you have to remember, here's Matthew McConaughey, and I will go through my whole repertoire of how this went down, because I'm a girl from Kentucky. All right, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, am I going to ask him to take a shirt off? How am I going to keep my cool? It's fucking Matthew McConaughey, which I did not when I first, we shot the second episode first. So we shot everything out of order. So the first day of shooting, my first day of shooting on True Detective was just me and Matthew for 12 hours in a room. And I was like, oh my God. So I lost my shit on him when he first said hi. He's like, hi. So, you know, are you in from LA? I'm like, I was born in Kentucky. I mean, I could not stop myself from talking. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, this is so embarrassing. Cause I have a rule that I don't talk to people until after I've worked with them. After I work with them and earn their respect, then I'll like engage in a conversation. I mean, the heavy hitters. I've like gotten to a lot of sets where I'm like, and also who knows what their work aesthetic is, and I don't want to get in their way. So I do not speak unless spoken to until after we start our partnership. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Matthew, I mean, he said hi to me and I just like fell all over myself with diarrhea of words. But they were about a month into shooting. He was so embedded in character. And you have to think he was also in an 18 hour work day. He was going from like late 90s, early 2000s, back to 90, like mid 90s. So he was all over the place. But he was so lasered in And I'd had 6 weeks to work on Lucy. So I, like, once I vomited all over myself when I met him, we sat in for rehearsal. And I remember, like, everybody from studio execs, people came in from HBO into that crammed little hotel room. There was like 50 people watching our rehearsal. And he commanded a lot of respect on that, just from the way he was inhabiting the character. And you have to remember, Cole was a quiet guy. So in between like setups and stuff, he really didn't say much. After we rehearsed, thankfully, he dropped a couple of his lines in rehearsal. Now here's a man who's in every single scene of this whole entire thing. So of course, but it took so much pressure, I felt like, off me, where I was like, okay, we don't have to be perfect. Remember, I'm here to play. I'm like, we're here to play. And he walked over me, he's like, this will be fun. This is going to be fun. And then he just went back and sat down. He didn't talk to me for like the next couple of hours out of character. Like whenever they would yell cut or stuff, because we were shooting on film too, he would kind of stay in character. And I gave him the respect. Like I said, like I just sat and held space for him. This, you have to remember too, as an actor, whose story are you coming forward and showing up and serving? And when you're playing with the big players, like especially I knew he had a lot on his shoulders. I'm the person like, what can I do for you? And, or let me keep my mouth shut and just play. But then I surprised him in one of the takes. I like went to go kick at him. And then afterwards, he like darted his eyes up to me. He's like, that was a good take. Keep doing that. So he would kind of, he would give a lot and then he would just hold the space. And then when I came back, the couple of days that I came back, he just kept giving me more and more permission to play. Because Cole is so reserved. So did he do anything that surprised me? No. As far as in like front of the camera, like he just was really locked in. He's everything that I expected. But what I liked is that I kind of felt like I got fathered through that role in the terms of like every once in a while I get like a good job kid. And so, but then, you know, like with the bar scene, when we shot the bar scene a couple of months later, he surprised me because the, like the, we probably had 300 extras, was starting to get a little rowdy every once in a while. And a couple of times he like yelled quiet down, like to reserve his like time and attention, and 350 people, he barely had to like raise his voice, but he's the number one and he was respecting, I think, the craft and the art, and look what he did. And he was trying to change the course of his career. So for me, I felt like I was a little kid sitting on a stool, getting to bear witness to like a butterfly emerging. Like I feel he was getting his strength. Like this, I'm going to show what I can do as an actor. And this isn't about being a playboy. This isn't about having people like me anymore. But he was still, and as soon as we wrapped, I mean, he came, and then I got the like, all right guy. Like he came over and was just really, he's a dream. And it's a dream to like, to work alongside somebody that understands his spirituality and his responsibility as an artist, and was able to shape shift and do a 180 on his career and manifested in the way that he did. It's pretty fucking awesome.
He has done something that very, very few people have done that I've ever seen. That right? Kind of, that kind of 180, where he's just like, fuck this. I am not doing these stupid chick flicks anymore. And I'm going to show you what I can really do. And wow.
Yeah. And I know like a little bit when I came through halfway through there, I know he had a millisecond of self-doubt of being like, oh wait, maybe I'm not doing enough. And to get to watch Carrie and him like discuss the scene and stuff, like he takes his craft very seriously. And that was something, it was amazing to be a student of somebody who can balance being whatever he needs to be out in the public, but like really taking a hold of his career that way. Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome to work with him. I would love to do it again and again and again and again and again.
Well, okay. Most of the people that are listening to this are newer actors and endlessly interested in auditioning. I'm going to ask you a couple of really specific questions about auditioning. A few things that you've talked about on your podcast that I wanted to have you explain on this one. First of all, primary and secondary focus.
Yeah. So Warner talks about this a lot. Warner Laughlin is my coach. You guys, if you don't take class with her or privates with her, go get her book. It's amazing. Warner Laughlin Technique. But she has a whole entire chapter about this primary and secondary focus. Your primary focus, of course, is your your lines, your focus. Where does your focus? Your focus is usually on your lines. Give yourself a secondary focus, or primary focus is your scene partner. Secondary focus is, are you holding a purse? And give that secondary focus an emotional reason to exist. Is that purse from your mother? Is that purse from your fiance? Did he buy you that instead of a ring? Like, give yourself a place to jump off it in a scene so that you're not so locked in. You know, those actors that just, their primary focus is these lines and how they're going to say them and at this person. They forget to take in the world. Secondary focus is just your world. What's around you, what's on you, what you can pop your focus to allow yourself to listen and be brought into the scene or be reactive in the scene. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm thinking about some of the people that I've spoken to, and they talk a lot about liking to distract themselves. And particularly this guy, Seth Parrish, who's like a really good actor. He's a big theater guy in New York, and he wrote actually also a really good book, and he's always talking about distracting himself. So he's always like, it's almost like he puts his primary focus not on the reader a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
And then he'll kind of get distracted by the reader and like pop back in and be like, oh yeah, you're still talking. And it's really interesting.
That's real life, right? Like how many times, maybe in this conversation, you pop to a secondary focus, you pop to your equipment, maybe the clock over there. Like, so we as actors, we almost have to like allow ourselves to get distracted by that. Cause then that's when the real moments come back in. That's when magic kind of happens, where the mistake all of a sudden happens, or like, you're like, oh God, shoot, sorry. Real life happens when you're in distracted or you're in secondary focus.
What about character thoughts?
Love character thoughts. That is my jam. On my way to auditions now, if I start having like horrible inner critic Alicia shit, like, who am I to be in this room? What is happening? Oh my God, I don't know all my lines. This is ridiculous. Is my baby okay? Like the spiral of like negative thoughts that might come in, trying to probably save me from my body knowing it's getting ready to go perform. I pop to like, my character doesn't want to be late because of this, or, oh my God, what is this person going to think? I put myself in the world with the character, at least if not on my drive there, maybe as soon as I hit the studio lot or as soon as I park my car. And then I will, at the top of my audition sides now, I'll do 1, 2, 3. I'll give 3 character thoughts to jump me off in a completely different way into the scene. So what is like, what is happening literally the moment before the scene starts? And what would I think about that before I'm spoken to or before I speak? And I give myself 3 different options. So if they give me a redirect or if I get flustered, I pop down, I see it, boom, okay, I'm in. I know, I read it, I'm thinking it. Like, well, that was shitty. And then they say something and then I'm in, like, you know, like that might be one of my character thoughts, or fuck you, or did I forget to turn off the oven?
Okay. I want to, this is something I need to ask you. And this is also something you mentioned on your podcast, which everyone should go listen to, that one audition. It's fucking so good. I've been recently talking to, people. Basically I had this theory, right? Here's my theory. So everyone gets nervous in auditions, right? And we always hear that it's really like the coolest person wins the job. Like if you go in there and you're just like sweating bullets and you look nervous as hell and you're kissing ass, it's not a very good look, right? We all know this, we hear it, right? But, and I feel like right now I'm pretty good at doing that. It took me a while. I used to be so nervous, and now it's not such a big thing anymore, but it is fucking hard to not be nervous in those situations. And my theory is that we're supposed to look at it like we are collaborating with the people in the room, right? Which we are. And it makes sense, right? We as actors have been put in a subservient role so many times leading up to the audition that by the time you get there and you're expected to completely flip that, we are told where to be, we have to pay to be there, we have to pay with our time, we have to do the work ahead of time for not without being paid. We don't have a choice of like when the audition is usually. And that's the way that the business works. That's just the way it's set up right now. And I understand that. And it's nothing against casting directors or anything, but that's the way it's set up. And then when we get into the room, we've already been put into this role so many times. And then we're expected to go, we're on equal playing fields here. But we're not, though. And I've been trained now to know that I'm not. So on your podcast, you said that you say, if the reader has the first line, you will say, I'll let you know when I'm ready. And the other thing that you also said was that if you don't like a take, you will say, and you will tell them, you won't ask them, that you want to do it again. I'd like to do that again. Not can I do it again, but I'd like to do it again. I'm just so interested in that because I think that that's so rare.
Maybe it is. I think, one, if you can figure out a way, have you worked in a casting office yet?
I have volunteered a couple of times, a couple of days, but that's about it. Yeah. I'd love to do it more.
So this is what I realized. So when I first moved out to LA, I interned at Mary the News office and some other, like, I'd be bopped around. Anytime anybody asks me to be a reader, I am all for it because you learn so much from being on the other side. And also from having my podcast, I would ask people all the time certain things. But what I realized was, one, this is, and from talking to casting directors, this is your time, man. And if you're called into that room, like, whatever you can do to get the nerves out of your fucking head, whatever, figure out whatever skill set that is, they really want you to do a good job. So when I come in, I decide immediately before I go in if I want to sit, want to stand. If I go in and there's not a chair, it takes me a second, it's fine. I just talk to them like they're normal human beings because that's what they are. And most likely the reader is also an intern, or the reading is associate, or the reader is doing their best not to fuck it up for you. Like, they're terrified. So I loved when people used to come in and tell me what to do as the reader. I'm like, fuck yeah, man, whatever you want. I want you to get this job. And because of that, that's why I think that it's good to go in and commit. And also I think it gives you back a little bit of that power. To be like, hey, like, and not in a dick way, like, hey, I'll let you know when I'm ready. Set up the room however you want, or look down at your paper and have that thought. And I always say, like, if they have the first line, I'll say, like, I'll let you know when I'm ready. I'll look at you when I'm ready. So then I can look down, have my character thought, feel it in my body, like really genuinely feel it, look up, connect, cam, we're in. Or I'll let you know when I'm ready. Or if I have the first line, I'll give myself that moment. I'll breathe. Also, nothing gets attention more in the room than stillness. So if somebody's eating or doing whatever they're doing and not paying attention to you or talking to each other, if you take a couple seconds to breathe, it might feel like an eternity to you, but it'll just silence the room and laser the focus to, like, you. And then how many times do you get in the car and afterwards and you're like, why did I do that? Like, why didn't I just ask for another take? I flubbed. Like, I want to try and say it without marbles in my mouth. Like, sometimes I make a joke too, where I'm like, well, let me try that in English now, you know, and like, let me get this out. And those are usually the ones that I book. Cause I'm like, let me do that again. Or I'll even talk to them and say, like, let me do that again, because I felt like I was coming across bitchy, and I know she's not bitchy. I'm just trying to finesse. Like, I want her. She has a controlling aspect, but I don't want it to slide over to here. Did it feel like that? And then you're in a dialogue. But you also have to, like, some people are like, okay, thank you. Like, I just had that happen just this past week. Like, I sat in the waiting room, and I was able to look at everybody and be like, oh, I'm the outlying choice for this, and I just don't think I'm right for it, which is fine. I'm still going to go and do what I want to do. But as soon as I was done, she was like, thank you. And the way she said it and the feeling I had before, I was like, yeah, I'm not the right type for this. And I'm not going to ask to do it again because I'm not the right type. And there might be somebody out there that's right, and they need to do it 3 or 4 times. And a casting director told me that the other day too. They're like, listen, sometimes when we say thank you, it's because we know, like, great, sure, that was great. You're not going to get it. Like, what? And there might be, like, somebody else that we need that person to get it because they look exactly like the person. Or studio said, we need X, Y, and Z, and that person is it, and we need to work with them for 20 minutes to see if they can do it. And I've also just started to, like, use my empathetic ways to be resourceful and say, like, is that worth demanding another take? Mm-hmm. But, and the worst they can say is no.
And then you're like, great, I just did it the one time anyways. Like, there's like, and it's not going to kill you if they say no.
Right.
I've had a couple of people say like, no, I think we're good. I'm like, are you sure? Because that didn't feel good for me. And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, I'm trusting you.
Yeah. No, that's so important. It's so important. And not only does it help you to feel like you have some of that power back, but you're also, you know, like one of probably the very few people who went in there and had some guts about it. You know, that was like, yeah, I mean, I'm here to do, I'm a professional here and I'm going to do what I need to do good work. So like what sparked this interest in the, I mean, I've always been interested in this subject, but I had this guy tell me who runs a taping studio in LA. He was saying that he sees all these people come in, and he's not a casting director, but he sees all these people come in, and they're still nervous, and they just kind of go and they go straight to the tape box, and they're like ready to whatever, they're shaking. And he said, this one guy, I said, what is it that they all have? The people who are booking again and again, what do they have? Because he knows who's booking these things. He said, it's a control over the room. Like they own it. And he said, this one guy, he came in and he took all of his stuff out of his pocket and he put it on a chair. The taper asked him, and he said, I do that in every single audition I ever go to. And it may seem like very like elementary, like, well, that who cares? It doesn't matter. But what it's doing is it's saying like, I'm going to take a few seconds to do what I need to do. And even if you don't need to have the stuff out of your pocket, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's, you're doing something. It's almost like you're taking a little bit of the time back.
Well, it's like, look at sports. Nobody gets mad at the guy shooting the free throw. You know, if he dribbles three times or if he dribbles twice or he takes a deep breath, nobody's like, what's that guy fucking doing?
We're running out of time, but I want to ask you one more question. What do you wish that someone would have told you earlier? How long have you been in LA? 15 years?
I've been in LA. Yeah, 15 years.
What do you wish somebody would have told you earlier?
Find Warner Laughlin immediately. I really wish this whole idea of a ladder of success. I wish somebody, like a lot of people I interview, Bill Esper, a lot of them that got coached and trained by Bill Esper, William Esper, he always says, you're going to be great, kid. It's going to take you 10 to 15 years. Because I think that I didn't allow myself the victories along the way. Like, oh, I got an agent. This is step one. Oh, I got a co-star. I thought that I needed to be really further along instead of learning my craft and putting the importance on earning the reputation with the casting directors and going in and like, really doing my job, like putting the value and the worth into the work instead of into the results. Okay, I want to do two or three co-stars, or I want to have an agent or manager by next year. And if by God you land a series regular, like great for you, but then you might pop right back into that other land. So I think just grace with time. No artistry, no creative person I've ever talked to did anything overnight. And I really thought it would happen quicker. So I think the like time to invest in your life and in your talents and your craft and what you might be learning. I wish I looked at every situation at the beginning as a learning experience and not a definitive moment of my value as an artist.
You mentioned at the beginning of this interview that you said that you've talked to some people who did have big successes really early on, and you said that they didn't like that.
Yeah, they then got shot back out into the wilderness of auditions and grabbing a job and figuring it out. And then also, the grass is always greener, right? You shoot straight to success or you get on a hit show and then nobody will see you for 5 or 6 years because you're that person on that show. Mm. Or you're that person on that show and you're not that good. Like a lot of people that get success early on, they have to learn on the job.
Right.
So if you don't hit right away, like just, you know, like your wine is aging, it'll get better and better and better. So, you know, you're also getting to practice in a way in which people aren't critiquing you quite yet.
All right. I'm going to squeeze one more in. If you could only have one, I know that you have a lot of strategies for preparing for auditions, but if you could only have one thing running through your head while you're driving to an audition, only rely on one strategy to give you the best result, what do you think that would be? What would you pick?
I would literally repeat to myself over and over again, open and present, just breathing. I really would, because I think as a creative person, if you are open, then the energy can flow through you. Like, it's literally like a spiritual quest. Like, think about when somebody looks at a blank page, or they paint something, or they do anything. If this is true artistry, if you already have the lines down and you just have to speak, go listen. Like, we act like it's brain surgery. We act like it's so hard. I say a lot of Hail Mary passes these days, being a mom, having the podcast, working from one thing to the next. And a lot of times on the way to an audition, I'm like, just be open, babe. Just stay open, stay open, stay open, stay open, stay open, stay open. If I can stay open and keep the inner critic away, like, let the years of riding a bike show up.
All right. Alicia Oxy, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find out more about you? Where can they connect with you on the internets?
On the internets, at Alicia Oxy on all social media. And my website's also Alicia Oxy. It's AlyshiaOchse. And at That One Audition, everywhere.
If you like this podcast, please go to your podcast app, scroll down, and give me a rating or a review. Thank you for listening.